Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for UAE Tour Stage 3. Really good stage. I think this was, exciting the last whole 2 hours of this stage, maybe 3 hours. Al Marjan Island to Jebel Jais, 176Ks. Can be boring, but not if you get crosswind action. It's pancake flat. They go south and then inland a little bit where the crosswinds can happen. And then Jebel Jais, 20 kilometers or 19 kilometers, 5.6%. Very, very regular. There is 1K at 8%, 4Ks from the finish, but it's a draft heavy climb. And the record's about 45 minutes, so it's still a decently long one. And Brandon McNulty started the stage in the GC lead. His teammate, Jay Vine, was in second on 2 seconds. Then Foss, I'm counting out Mikael Björk, Foss was maybe provisionally third on 14 seconds, followed by a whole host of riders. Like Bilbao O'Connor, all the way down to Yates on 28 seconds. So a lot to play for on this stage, with 10 bonus seconds also being very important. So what was the break? Was there a breakaway? Was Mark Stewart in the original break again today, Benji?
I actually didn't see the break, because when I was launched into the action was when I got a text from our man Luke here in the chat, our producer. He was saying, Echelons, and I straight up opened the UAE live stream, the broadcast of the race. That is not the official, like, Discovery Plus or whatever English broadcast yet. We were looking at, like, UAE Arabic commentary, and I gotta be honest about it, before I jump into the actual action, I think I got addicted to the Arabic commentary, because I started watching in Arabic, and I never finished. I never switched back to English. I continued watching, because that man kept shouting. He was shouting, Belgiki, Belgiki, Belgiki. And I was like, what's happening? What's happening? Belgium, Belgium. Melier just hit the front of the group. That was it.
he was going crazy about Milano, helping Yates and Vine and McNulty. He's going crazy about Milano. Like, what an unbelievable job. Obviously, you know, everybody knows my Arabic contextually is pretty good, at least in cycling. So I guess that's what he was saying. Milano was doing a good job.
It makes sense. The problem is, they're always enthusiastic. So
that's I actually can't, because you gotta have some variety. Like, the fact that it's always if everything's special, nothing's special. Yeah. So yeah, I can't do it for more than about 5 minutes, and I'm like, okay, they're just rolling along at 100 watts now. Let's settle down.
It took 15 minutes for me to realize there was a co-commentator, because the same guy kept ranting for 15 minutes onwards. And then suddenly a co-commentator, like, very silently in Arabic on the other side. And I was like, oh, there's another guy. But anyway.
Yeah. But they love cycling. The guys on Instagram, like, they follow it all year. Like, they love it. So, I mean, good on them. At least they're enthusiastic.
That's what we love.
Anyway, crosswind action today. Echelon started the UAE. We were looking for who was in each group. It was very exciting. Crosswinds, this always happens, Benji. Like, oh my God, crosswinds. There's people all over the road. And then as more information develops, you're like, oh, no one really is caught behind.
Mate.
That's serious.
Bjerg was caught behind. And what we said before the stage started, the key to breaking UAE on Jebel Jais is making sure Bjerg gets dropped early. And if we can drop him with 90K to go, he's dropped it. But the problem is, you got to keep that up until the climb. And if there's no other GC rider dropped behind, then most teams are like, well, why are we keeping this up? And then the wind turns, because they turn into a different direction. Then there's headwind for a bit at like 68K to go, where we were hoping maybe they were once again the crosswinds, but it was once again, well, headwind. Then that causes the group to kind of fall apart, the echelons to kind of fall apart. And go ahead.
Well, like, that's what happens. It's like the directors and teams are dealing with incomplete information too. So when there's crosswinds, they hit it, they keep pushing. Ah, we're in group one. Get on the front. We're in group one. We know we're in group one. We don't know who's in group two yet. So you keep pushing, and then as information filters through, oh, Simon Carr's in group two. So I'm just saying, like, Simon Carr and Van Aveld maybe are in group two. So is is Ilan Van Wilder going to tell his whole team to pace on the front of group one for an hour and a half? No. No. It's not like Yates was in group two or someone like that.
Was it surprising that Alpecin was one of the most fanatic teams to keep the echelons going? Because from the top of my head, I don't even know who they have outside of their sprinter groves.
Jason Osborne.
Yeah, they technically do. I wasn't necessarily expecting crazy of him, but maybe that's because he had bad luck in Santos with an under, and that's why I didn't really expect him to do well here, but I actually don't know where he ended, so he might have actually ended well. But that being said, that echelon, it all got together after like 25 kilometers, 35 kilometers of action with 65k to go.
The only resplit was when DSM hit it in a short, they changed direction for like 3Ks, DSM hit it again. They were very strong in crosswinds. Ineos were also very good. I must say, in the crosswinds, they were all present except for the two young guys. And when DSM hit it, poor AJ August and Michael Leonard, the two teenagers, just spat out of group two. And Cav was just giving them a lesson. Because they, I don't know who it was, maybe it was a lotto rider. There was a right to left crosswind, and it was a cambered road bending left. And the lotto rider went to the left gutter and Cav abused the fuck out of him. Oh, no, he didn't. He just said, get to the right. Because to create another echelon, to create drafts, which is correct. And then the lotto rider did and they started rolling through again. So what? Cav was actually good.
I think it was the Jent, but I'm not sure. Which...
really?
I would expect the Jent to be pretty experienced. So
yeah.
Don't expect him to need a lesson of Cavendish for echelons, to be honest.
So. August and Leonard were just behind Cav watching this, like, oh my God, welcome to World Tour. Well, Leonard was in last year. But anyway, Bora got resplit because they were sleeping.
Yeah,
they all had the team at the back and DSM resplit it. But actually that was good for group two because then a whole team of rouleurs were there for group two. So,
but it all came back together. Reality is, it all came back together. And we got a bit of a breakaway. Mark Stewart, like you mentioned, together with Jonas Rickard, attacked after this echelon situation was done. So at about 65k to go. But nothing happens then between 65k to go and Jebel Jais, except one thing, and that's a pretty massive thing for the race. We have a crash in the peloton, and the top favorite of the race is involved. Adam Yates is involved. He hit his head hard. I didn't see it during the race, but we checked it before the podcast to see if it was actually true. A lot of people were upset that he seemingly didn't get a concussion check, but I did notice by the side of the road, they were checking his helmet and he was checking his helmet back on the bike. So if the team knows he hit his head, was checking his helmet,
Yates knows he hit his head.
Yeah, but the team was also checking it, I'm pretty sure,
really?
By the side of the road. And if that is the case, and then they don't do a concussion check, then it's the responsibility of the team.
Yeah, and like he hit his head, it's tough to watch. He hit his head fucking hard. Like, he's literally used his head to go from 65 kph to zero and just bang off the tarmac, off the back of his head. And he was checking his head, he looked dazed. He must have felt terrible. He must have felt terrible. And the thing is, probably any other GC rider, like say, I don't know, if Remco was here, they get in the car.
Yeah.
Probably. But for UAE riders and Yates, he's the race favorite defending champion, but won this race before, home team, big favorite. They don't want to abandon. And that's just another data point of, I'm not saying these are horrible people, they did anything wrong. I'm just saying we talked about this in the weekly show maybe two weeks ago, that like the systems in place are not adequately protecting riders when they could have had a serious concussion. And so this is another data point in that. And a guy has literally braked using his head from 70. And
I'm not a doctor, but this was probably one of the worst head on the floor crashes I've seen in a while. And it wouldn't shock me if he ends up having a concussion as a consequence of that, because that looked very serious. Like the fact that he was back on his bike in no time, to give some closure towards it, he did drop early on Jebel Jais and abandoned the race, which is a wise decision. But why did he keep going? Is that because he wasn't sure whether he had a concussion yet or something? Or because Adam Yates...
He must have felt bad, though.
Yeah, but
like him abandoning, Bruzy felt bad.
As a rider, I can understand it. You want to keep going. But who made the decision then? Was it just him like realizing, no, fuck, why am I doing this, right?
He must have gone, he gone to Jace and he must have felt so bad and pulled out. And you can see him with Machi. Imagine's like, don't, you know, are you lip reading? But he is obviously pulling out, feels bad for the team maybe. And Machi was like, don't worry about it. Like, it's all good.
Health first there.
Yeah, so it's not even like, I don't even, you don't know what happened in the car. So it's just sometimes the riders, they want to continue if they can, and then they try that. Oh, I don't feel good. But it's just, it's a shame to see him. Hopefully he recovers quickly. Obviously a fantastic rider. He was in fantastic shape. And yeah, I hope Yates comes back as quickly as possible with no adverse effects from that. But yeah, that did change things. The reality is that changed a lot of things, Benji.
Yeah,
I would say their best climber is out of the race. Their pre-race favorites out of the race. They lose another climber to follow attacks. And it now really means that McNulty's in the GC lead and it's just Vine 2 seconds behind him. So they only have Bjerg. And so how would they play it?
And it adds this extra dynamic between McNulty and Vine here, because if you see the situation you see with Yates in it, then Yates is going to be the guy that attacks first because he's way behind. So that's kind of the logic behind it. But if you have two riders that are literally next to each other, the only difference is that there's 2 seconds in between and a leader jersey on the other, then the difference is not gigantic. And they might feel a bit shit if the other guy gets to attack and they don't. And then the other guy gets the leader jersey as a consequence. And that kind of dynamic in the race starts to be created. And that's a situation you don't want in a team when it comes to people management, I would say. But the thing is also, you're right, they only had Bjerg, but I don't think Yates getting out of the race changed that for me. As in, they would only have Bjerg with Yates in the race anyway.
Yeah.
They would have gone for 3 leaders, regardless of whether Yates, well, Bjerg would have been the only man that I would have trusted on the climb to be there as a full-on domestique, is what I would say. But anyway, Yates is out. Unfortunate for him, unfortunate for the race. In some shape or form, it opens things for Jabal Hafid a bit, but I think it's a bit too early to start looking at that as a consequence of someone crashing out, in my personal opinion. But the break got caught with 29k to go, about 10k later, and we started heading towards Jabal Jaiz. And there I was curious, because obviously Yoyi is going to try and relatively soft pace, I would reckon. Hope that they can get a bit of a sprint going at the end with McNulty and stay in the same GC spots towards Jabal Hafid, is my guess. And Langen actually was pretty strong at the start of Jabal Jaiz, paced the first 3 kilometers, and then Bora came to the front. And I like this early on the climb. Someone taking over, a team taking over, and upping the tempo to try and reduce the domestiques that UAE has, is how I viewed it. Danny Van Poppel was the man for Bora, and riders started dropping, but unfortunately, at this point, it's the sprinters, right? This climb is not 20%, it's 4 to 6% at this point, so Welsford off the back, Viviani off the back, those kind of riders. But then we get to 13.6, 13.5k to go, Langen takes over again. And then it didn't take long before we got major flashbacks from last year, right? With 12k to go?
Yeah, Movistar tried the same tactic again, launching Rubio with a uphill like lead out. I don't know if it was Malaysia. I think it was Malaysia, not Romo.
Okay.
Malaysia or Paleo Sanchez, not sure which. I'm still getting used to everybody on the new teams. And they did it, and I was like, not again. They can't pull this trick again. And the problem for Rubio was Bjerg was too strong. So Bjerg pulls him back and I was like, commend them for trying. At this point, Yates drops and pulls out of the race. Bjerg then just keeps pulling. So basically we're thinking it's a big group. We've got a lot of riders still there. We've got multiple of Jumbo, Visma Leasebike, multiple of Decathlon, AG2R, multiple of Sudal Quickstep. They got Jan Hirt. Van Wilder, Van Sevenot maybe. And then Ineos start pacing. And I actually don't think this is that bad, because Foss is now third provisionally on GC. I think they were pacing defensively. I think they were trying to set a steady tempo to try and get as close to the line as possible so Foss could keep that provisional third position and use that with Rivera or Rodriguez. I mean, arguably, just do nothing. Wait, because what's the alternative? Bjerg keeps pacing, drops earlier, then more carnage. Is that good for Foss?
Then you have Castro on paper as well after Bjerg drops, is my thought. You know, if he doesn't do anything early either, I think it was the rider before Castro that was doing the pacing with 7.5 kgs.
No, there's no Castro here. It's Rivera.
Who was that? All right. It was Rivera?
Oscar Rodriguez and Rivera.
See,
Oscar Rodriguez, you got to get used to all these different
guys. They have the same mustache.
I think it was Oscar Rodriguez.
I swear they have the same mustache. I'm not okay with this.
It's not Castro. If Castro is here, we're on the damn stage.
I recognize them by the mustache.
There's too many mustaches going on as well. Has there been some paper released by Bert Blocken or somebody that mustaches McNulty, Vine, Wellsford? Okay, Australians and Americans, fair enough. But then the South Americans got them going?
Mate, Gaviria? Vine looks like you've got an actual caterpillar on his under his nose. And
it must give you what?
I don't know what's up with McNulty. Not going to lie. I don't know what's up with the mustache of McNulty. He looks like he's 70 years in the past with his mustache.
Yeah, Vine and McNulty, they're like Air Force pilots. They're going to be in...
Top Gun.
Yeah, Top Gun. Listen, it seems to be all the rage, and it seems the guys with the mustaches are performing, or maybe it's survivorship bias because they're performing, you notice the mustache. I don't know. Don't change your winning formula. Anyway, in your start pacing, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world, frankly. Like, what else are Rivera and... I mean, Rivera could almost win the stage, but what else are...
I don't like it necessarily. As in, if you're Foss, sure, you're on a podium spot on the UAE tour, but this is also a climb that should fit you regardless. You should be able to follow this group until the top if you're actually ready for GC in this race in the first place. And then they basically pace the same pace that Bjerg was doing. If it was faster than Bjerg, I would understand to try and drop Bjerg and try and make you... But you're right, it's defensive, I just don't like it. It feels like the tactic you'd use if you're the favorite for the race.
Yeah, and then to your point, if you're so concerned about getting dropped on Jebel Jais, then you're not a serious threat for GC here anyway, because like this is a 5% climb. So I take your point. I didn't think it was the worst thing in the world. And then Hirt attacks. So Hirt attacked off that pace, then comes back. Bjerg starts pacing again. So Bjerg went really, really deep into this climb, did a really, really good job. And then Nicolas Prudhomme. I said after Classic IN, they are cooking Decathlon. They look different this year. And Nicolas Prudhomme ups the pace and it's dropping Romeo. It's Ivan Romeo, who's still there. Conrad's on a bit of a gap. And yeah, it's really thin the group now from like 40 to 25. I'd say the group's now like 20. You got Van Wilder still there. They're more jostling for position now, but Prudhomme's really got it in a line. And then he stops. And then Vine just keeps pacing. And this was the moment where you have to look a bit into the future.
Yeah.
And if you want to keep two riders on the same GC position on a drafting sort of climb, I'm not talking on Angleroo or a heavy climb where the strongest will win. I'm talking where tactics and draft matters. Doing it defensively is actually impossible to do that, even though that's like the natural inclination to do. And so Vine, the only way for UAE to get the best result possible on GC in this stage is for Vine to attack off Prudhomme's pace. But instead, the clear orders from the car is to pace for McNulty and wait for Bjerg to come back. But that's just delaying the problem down the road because other people are going to attack again.
And you don't even know if Vine's worse than or better than McNulty at this point anyway. So
it's 2 seconds.
Yeah, it's 2 seconds difference. You don't know what the difference is going to be on Jebel Hafid between them. On Jebel Jais, not either, because the last 2 kilometers are still coming. And, well, the situation you get then is Vine's doing a bit of a tempo and they're not really figuring out what could happen from behind. They're just setting their tempo, hoping that no one attacks. And if you hope that no one attacks, because Vine's not going to go all out, obviously, he thinks in his head, I'm also on 2 seconds of GC, so why would I be pacing all out for McNulty? Like, sure, he's my teammate, he's currently in lead, but I'm so close that I might as well smell the GC myself. So he's not going to give his all, and that means that it's a tempo that people can attack upon. And then we see arguably the biggest Ciclismo move that I've seen this year. Age Desert, Decathlon Age Desert, Dies van Rijssels, they're flying, my man, because this move, VPP, with O'Connor in the wheel, You can go through it. It was amazing.
The incredible uphill sprint lead out, like better than Torres and Rubio last year. Because when Prudhomme pulled off, I thought, what's VPP doing? Get on the front. Look, because it didn't make sense. Why would you pace? And then Bio comes back and he's setting setting the tempo that's easy for the GC riders again. And VPP, you see him talking to O'Connor. One under the Flamme Rouge, huge lead out. And that's all you need because the draft is so important. And basically, Vine looks back, looking for McNulty. McNulty's not responding. He's deep in the group. And I don't mean chasing, but like Van Wilder was right there. Rivera starts chasing and Van Wilder was immediately chasing. And McNulty wasn't like bang on Van Wilder's wheel, ready to go over the top. He was deeper in the group. And so then Vine's looking and then he jumps, but he's jumping. The camera foreshortens it. These are big gaps now on this sort of climb that they're closing. And Box, super strong in this sort of effort, was good in Mercia. He won Mercia, where he dropped Wellens on a not that steep a climb and then solid to the finish. And we think, is he going too early? But the lead out caused there to be gaps everywhere. Vine's chasing with no draft. Van Wilder's chasing with no draft. There's then another little gap behind Van Wilder to someone like Van Aertveldt, who's sitting in. There's no Domestiques picking it up after Rivera. So perfect timing from a decathlon as it is there. And O'Connor, despite looking back a million times, that's why I picked him yesterday, at least one of my picks, because he's always going to try. He always tries because he knows he can't win the sprint. And so he doesn't just go and then, oh, I lost the sprint. He always has a crack. And he did it on a shallow climb, La Molina, in Catalunya in 2022. And it worked perfectly today and great teamwork from them. So, yeah, chapeau.
And you said it. The draft is so important on this climb that it's all about that initial separation. So just pacing and then O'Connor attacking would be a thing. Then you have some separation, but attacking with two riders to then attack with a second rider again gives that extra ability to keep that separation going. And we saw that indeed with Rubio last year and this time with O'Connor and him keeping that going. And then we see the reactions behind with Vine then trying to chase it himself because everybody's kind of on the limit at this point. They're like, it didn't look like everybody had most of the energy left, but I think there were a few riders that were trying to kind of keep in position for an actual sprint because Leonard Van Aertveldt was up there trying to position himself in the wheel of fourth, fifth position in that group. I reckon I was looking at some other riders as well. I think Max Poole was up there. I had lost Ineos completely after, I think it was Rivera, like you said, that when the, by the way, Rivera, can we just say that this man went from being one of the more useless riders on Ineos to actually becoming a very proper World Tour rider.
Yeah, he's a decent rider, yeah.
Yeah, I swear in the past, I felt like he was kind of the plus one of Bernal on the team.
He was Bernal's friend. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but now he's actually
good. Like Mullen with Bennett. Mullen got the contract at Bora because, you know, well, is he Irish? But, you know, because they were friends. And then it ends up Mullen was better than him and stayed at Bora. So maybe, I don't know, Axel who's Otto Vergara could be better than Pedersen in 2 years. Who knows? Maybe not. But yeah, Brandon Rivera, solid level World Tour rider. But yeah, Foss not finishing in the top 10. Van Aertveldt wins that sprint for third. Max Poole, fourth. Van Wilder, fifth. Valter, sixth. Richitello, seventh. Bilbao, I'll never understand this man. For someone who can sprint like he can and who's a good climber, I just,
mate,
the fact he's being beaten by Richitello in like this uphill sort of sprint, it makes no sense to me. It like defies his power curve.
If Bilbao sprints on a 0% surface, he's great. But if it goes to 2% or above, he's losing. He's fucked.
Maybe super error, I don't know. He's eighth. Rubio's ninth despite trying earlier, and Carr is 10th. We don't have any results yet past the top 10. But 5 second gap that O'Connor takes. He also takes 10 bonus seconds. So he takes 15 seconds on McNulty and actually goes ahead of him on GC into second and 11 seconds behind Vine. McNulty just hangs on. He's like the back of the group, doesn't get put on a time gap, but he lost a lot of time to O'Connor in that final kilometer. it's not hindsight. It's not hindsight because
yeah,
you could have predicted this happening. I thought Mignolet would be a little bit better, but Vine had to be aggressive and use his legs. In fact, when you lose Yates, it becomes even more important to do that because yeah, inevitably you'll be attacked. And I think he could have won the stage today if he'd anticipated and gone after Prudhomme. He clearly felt good. But still, they're in the GC lead, UAE. It's not a disaster. They're still leading GC by 11 seconds and McNulty's only 2 seconds behind O'Connor. So it's still all to play for, but this race, Benji, looks a lot more open than it did after the TT yesterday.
Yeah, certainly. And on one end, it's a shame that it comes as a consequence of Adam Yates crashing out, because if he didn't crash out, if he was still in this group, even if you lost in this group, what the hell did you just do? Did you spill everything or?
Spill water myself.
But anyway, what was I saying? Oh, if Yates was still in the race, regardless of what he had, would have lost on Jebel Jais, he'd still be the favorite for Jebel Hafid. So with him out of the race, it's unfortunate that that happened, but it does open the possibilities in GC for Jebel Hafid. And like the lead now, wait a second, McNulty lost the lead.
Yeah. Vine's leading. And
with
McNulty's
13 seconds down on Vine. O'Connor is second, like you said. So I'm kind of thinking through GC right now, what the possibilities are for Jebel Hafid and who's the favorite. I think Vine looked fucking strong on this climb, so I'd expect him to be the favorite for Jebel Hafid. But is Hafid very tactical to begin with?
Yeah. Hafid's still tactical. It's still only 7% in a lot of the kilometers. And then it levels off at the end. There's a flat 2% section. Yeah, it's still very tactical. You still need riders to draft to set it up for you. Mavi Garcia did the same watts as Capecchi last week.
Yeah, but that
and she
was...
And she lost 30 seconds.
I don't see anyone on this list that will probably do that move on draft.
But Vine needs someone to do that for him. If he wants to drop O'Connor. So
and McNulty's still too close, I reckon, for both of them, for McNulty to start riding for Vine suddenly on Jebel Hafid. So
what would you do if you were them?
If I was them, first of all, I'd hope that Bjerg has another great day. But secondly, I would probably play more defensive than more offensive than defensive on Jebel Hafid. As in, I would make a move with McNulty, with Vine responding to important people that respond, and try and isolate the others so that it's a mano a mano towards the end, where you're kind of indirectly forcing the others to make the action to reduce the group. That make any sense?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you smash it with Bjerg at the base, McNulty goes as soon as possible, and you try and force O'Connor to chase him. That's because it's... And O'Connor, as I said the other day, you remember Catalunya? Yeah, he won that great stage to La Molina. Remember the next mountain stage? He chased everybody.
Yep.
And so that's what I would try. I would try to bait O'Connor with McNulty, have Vine in the wheel. Then Vine goes over the top.
But outside of Vine, O'Connor, McNulty, and GC, who are we looking at where we think this rider could actually surprise or something? Because...
Poole. Poole. Van Aertveld, if he seems to be okay.
But the thing with Van Aertveld for me is, I'm not 100% certain Jebel Hafid is a perfect climb yet. As in, the percentages in my head should be, but it still feels like a step forward compared to what he's done in the past. So I need like the boosting confidence. Because today I had full confidence in him. He won the sprint behind, because I know he has that kick after a climb where he can be in the group. On paper, he's light enough for Jebel Hafid to work for him.
Yeah, but it's for punchers like Poggi.
Yeah. But he's Belgian, so I have lack of confidence.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I think it's a good climb for him. Poole is someone who'd have to go a little bit earlier. Yeah. It's actually... I wonder if it's almost a better climb for McNulty. It's shorter. It's 27 minutes, 28 minutes versus 45 minutes. And do the crosswinds affect McNulty today before the climb? Like, because McNulty did huge watts in the TT yesterday. He's not suddenly shit. Like, he did probably 430 watts or something for 13 minutes. Is it the duration of Jace? Was it the big kick at the end? Because it's
the pressure of being
drafting.
Leader suddenly.
I don't know. Maybe her feet suits him better. So I think they got it. Well, we say they've got to go on the offense, but O'Connor's got to win the stage to win GC, right? So
yep.
Isn't it Decathlon have got to do something?
Well, Decathlon certainly have the team to do it, seemingly. Prodom was really good. VPP was pretty good. I don't know if they had riders before Prodom that could still be there, but I don't think you need much more than that the way those two riders were performing today. Like,
yeah.
I think you have enough to shred the group a bit, and all the other riders in the team can work on trying to shred the bottom of the climb. But if I was Decathlon, I would consider just shredding it and hoping that O'Connor is simply good enough to beat the others. But, and the thing is, if you are offensive as Decathlon, you've got a slight chance that your actions as a team might take out one of the two leaders of UAE. If one of them has a bad day, your team might be able to expose them before O'Connor has to fight the other one.
Yeah. It's tricky.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I actually don't know what the teams will do.
I don't know either.
Anyway, we've spoken a lot about her feet. Tomorrow's stage is, by the way, the full list just came through. Foss lost 20 seconds. McNulty is put on 14 seconds. So he actually was credited with losing a fair bit of time. In this stage, he came 18th on the stage and lost 9 seconds to the Javine Van Eedveldt main GC group, Foss a bit further back. So not the best day for them, but we'll see how they pick up in coming days. Tomorrow's stage, finishing in Dubai Harbour, we got a sprint again, starts in Dubai, goes southeast to the Al Qudra cycle track. And then they, come back and do the big sprint in Dubai. It's a little bit technical, actually, the Dubai Harbour one. A little bit technical. There's like a couple of right. There's a couple of 90-degree turns. Yeah, I don't know why I said that. It's a Middle East highway sprint. It's not going to be that technical compared to Europe. But it's still... I can't remember the Palm... Is this the Palm Jumeirah one?
I'm looking at the map. And
yeah, it's the Palm Jumeirah one.
Yes. So they go like back and forth on that thingy.
The promenade. Who have you got,
that
Benji?
I think this is one where the Bora lead out could actually stand out.
Yeah.
Because this is, if I recall, the one where Bennett also won because of the Bora lead out 2 years ago. I'm actually going to trust my gut and say Welsford, even though... Fuck it, Welsford. Even though my Lear is the better sprinter, Welsford.
Okay. Who did I like?
Out of it, the Klein. He was good.
Nah, he's a draft merchant. And also Xylard.
Luke's fuming.
Xylard or someone crashed. I don't know. I think Xylard had an issue. So,
okay.
That's the Dutch lead out. Maybe he. The client can lead out Jakobsen.
Wait, draft merchants don't need their leader, right? Come on.
Yeah, true. I'd put them in position before the last K, then he follows the wheels. The client's actually good. He's a very consistent sprinter. I'm going to go with Fabio Jakobsen. His chain stays on. DSM impressed me today. I think he's still fast. He never gets in position. Tomorrow might be the 1 in 10 times he gets in decent position. And when he does, he's quick. Groenewegen is also the same. One of those two could also win. Groenewegen would have won last year if Philipsen didn't close him on one of the stages. But I'm going to go with Fabio.
I just want to tell you, some tea just dropped.
Oh, yeah?
So yesterday, you might have seen the Lefebvre stuff about Alaphilippe saying that Lefebvre was in like Humo, which is like a Belgian magazine, where he was saying he drinks quite a lot or drank quite a lot last year, stuff like that. Basically, dude, things Lefebvre that a manager shouldn't be saying. Lefebvre said that about Alaphilippe, but okay. I know where the confusion could come in, as I have vivid memories of Lefebvre being drunk on national TV in a cycling talk show at some point.
I actually think he said he had a hyperglycemic episode. I actually think he did.
Really?
Because I actually think he did, yeah.
I think no one in Belgium believes it.
Really?
Yeah. He was also drinking during the show.
But if he drinks all the time, then like he wouldn't be like that.
I don't know.
So no one believed the hyperglycemic story.
Not that I'm aware of.
I'm the only believer. I'll lap it up. Yeah, Patrick. Yeah, yeah.
But Marion Rus just released a statement on Twitter, I've seen, a French statement along the likes of, whatever the feelings of Monsieur Lefebvre towards me are, it is unacceptable to attack our private life like he is doing. So no, I never drink alcohol. I also got lost the holidays because with a child for 3 years, we prefer to be in shape for the tomorrow. Blah, blah, blah. So a whole list of things. Is it something we will go into now or should we eat it up a bit?
Oh, Luke's posted it in English.
Oh, okay. That was English.
I thought you were translating it from French.
Well, don't you trust my French at this point? You posted it in English? I was talking English.
Yeah, I know, but I could tell you were translating and you got tired. Because you got halfway through the statement, you said, ah, can we do it tomorrow? Yeah, you got fooled. You got halfway through 3 sentences. Yeah, fuck this. I'm translating French for 2 minutes.
You got me, fuck.
I'll read it out. Yeah, Ms. Rouge just posted a statement. Oh, we shouldn't laugh. But it is funny.
Ms. Rouge? Or?
Ms. Rouge.
Okay.
Ms. Rouge. Whatever Mr. Lefebvre's feelings towards me is unacceptable to attack our private lives as he is doing, so no, I don't drink alcohol ever. Missed for the holidays too. I presume that means didn't drink either during the holidays, because with a 3-year-old, we prefer to be in shape in the morning. You'll not succeed either, as you've already mentioned to me, in stopping me from working to keep myself busy and stay close of Julian during his career. Full stop. The missions I carry out fascinate me and know that I have lots of projects, but I tell you, under no circumstances will I allow you to talk about my private life. Please now stop talking indiscriminately and show more respect and class. And I think that's very fair enough. That statement from her, because first of all, let's take it back a step.
Yeah.
Alaphilippe, we may as well, we've introduced the topic now. Alaphilippe, Tour de France, 2019, yellow jersey for 2 weeks, unbelievable, back-to-back world champion, winning this, winning that, best French rider, best quick step rider, great. Lefebvre, as I understand, is the boss at quick step. Am I wrong? He's the boss in terms of giving out contracts.
Yeah. Not officially, but he does the deals.
So if you decided to give Alaphilippe a monster contract, that's on you. You did that. Yeah. You can say Alaphilippe and his agent, they do their job. They ask for, this is what contract we want. You gave him that contract. So there needs to be, there seems to be a lack of looking in the mirror a little bit. From Lefebvre, it seems like he has buyer's remorse. Well, you bought it. In defense of Alaphilippe, massive crash in Liège, 22, right? Where Bardet Strade as well. Died. Strade, big crash. So two crashes before the Tour.
His own team car had him in Brabant-Sabel.
Yeah. And so big crashes. Now, don't get me wrong. His level doesn't seem to be, has not been the same outside of that. As well, the last 2 years, I would say, hasn't been as good.
Yeah. Fair.
Notwithstanding an impressive Dauphiné win last year, at the Tour de France again last year, he was just aimless. Aimless and not good enough, yeah. And then but we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. So, if a rider isn't doing the nutrition plan, is drinking too much, isn't training right, I'd prefer it wasn't done publicly.
Yes.
But I think as a team manager paying millions of bucks, you're entitled to be like, cut that out. That's not good enough as one Correct. Of the star riders. That's fine. But then to be like his wife, Marion Rus, who's well-respected, who has her own career, who's on France TV, who was first directrice of Tour de la Provence and then is now directrice of Tour de France Femme. Like, she has good jobs. Like the director of the biggest women's race in the world, owned by ASO, and on national TV during the Tour de France doing comms. They're good jobs. And I've listened to her commentary. She's good.
She's
really good. Why bring her into it? That just makes it seem completely petty.
One, I want to bring up that someone in the chat of the live stream just said, so Benji's translation was spot on. Just wanted to get that out there.
I'm saying you got tired. Your translation is fine.
But on a serious note, one, I even think speaking publicly about potentially drinking too much and a potential drinking problem, because it sounded like an alleged drinking problem the way I read it. And if you present it like that, then I don't think that should be public regardless of whether it's true or not. That's something you don't do public, because then if he's not following the nutrition plan, if he's not doing his job, basically, then don't you have like grounds contractually to look into terminating his contract as a consequence eventually? Because if you can prove that he's
you can't terminate Ra's contract for not doing
his job.
nutrition plan, I don't think.
No, but like if it's like very visibly hindering his job.
Yeah. If they literally have an alcohol problem or something like that and they can't train at all, then sure. You probably have the CPA, if they're doing their job right, would be fighting against that. In an ideal world, you would try to support a rider with these issues, if they have these issues. And, you know, create a supportive environment. What's going on? Why is this happening? Okay, how can we help you? Whereas mentioning it in the press, what good will that do? Because I'm sure he said this to his face. He said they've had this conversation. Yeah. So you've had the conversation, the hard conversation to face. Okay, we weren't there. I think if there are these issues, you're entitled to say you need to up your game. But Marion Roos' statement implies to me that Lefebvre has said to her, you're doing too much of your own work. You should be supporting Julian more.
Yeah.
That's what she's implying, right? Because she says,
yep,
as you've already mentioned to me, you'll not succeed in stopping me from working myself to keep busy. Like, what's it to him what Marion Roos does in her work life?
And like, for example, yesterday I tweeted along the lines of, if Lefebvre was my boss, I'd probably get drunk too, which I don't know if I'd survive with someone that is actively like insulting me publicly while I'm trying to do my job. The week before Omloop is starting, like, it's obviously jokingly said, but
before Worlds, remember him and Patrick Evenepoel.
And you can say, yeah, Patrick Lefebvre is great at his job and managing a team and so forth, but that doesn't give you a right to insult and discriminate your riders publicly and like criticizing them based on their actual riding and so forth and their cycling. I'm fine with that. Like, if you're like actually cycling badly or something, or you're not working for the team when they're asking you to, stuff like that, I'm okay with that. But if you're like going into the personal aspect, even if that personal aspect hinders the business aspect, and exposing that, because I had heard rumors about the certain rumors about Alaphilippe in the way that Lefebvre is presenting, but to make that public and expose that publicly, I think that's completely not done.
Yeah, but it seems counterproductive, because if you've already fired the rocket up him privately, I don't know. And to bring his wife into it, I think, or his partner into it, I don't see how that helps, because
that's a low blow.
Alaphilippe with Marion Roos when he was killing it?
Yep. I think so.
Yeah. So it just trying to blame. Yeah, it seems a bit misogynistic, to be honest. It's a bit of a shame. So at least Marion Roos stood up for herself. I don't know how, to your point, Benji, I'm thinking now, if someone publicly attacked my wife and then I have to go work for that person and I got Omloop on Saturday and you're paying me millions of euros, you know what I'll do? Nothing.
Exactly.
See ya. I'll fulfill my contractual obligations to the letter, but you'll not get it extra. And listen, that means maybe that he won't get a good contract out of. He'll still probably get a good contract out of Total and Decathlon.
Yeah.
So he doesn't. Or maybe he'll just get a couple of wins and then say, you know what, fuck you. I'm going on the holiday on July or August. You won't see me. Maybe you'll send him to Guangxi, but not done. I also think Alaphilippe, generally speaking, is a good teammate in terms of working for others, yeah, from what I've seen.
I think so too. He did that in the Vuelta as well before he crashed out that year, or was it 2 years ago?
Did it for Asgreen in Tour of Flanders 21, sacrificed, yep, himself, I think. So I like Alaphilippe, and I hope if he has it, I'd like to see him come back to top shape, even though when he is a bit of a pantomime villain when he is in good shape, chopping people. But we need, yep, those characters as well. I remember Leuven Worlds was crazy. Anything else?
Well,
do you think this is it? Is this the last we'll hear of it, or do you think there'll be more?
I think Marion Roux slapping the table will probably be a big hit of like, fuck. Because there, she's going to have a lot of support, deservedly, for the statement she brought out. And I hope this turns the button in the head of Lefebvre for a second. The classics are coming. I think there's too little time for there to be another blow up.
I think this is going to go the way of Bennett.
Yeah?
I think unless Alaphilippe starts winning loads of races.
But
yeah, I think it's going to be like the Bennett situation again. So anyway, it's a bit of a shame. A bit of a shame before Omloop for that, yep, to come out. But hope you... Well, who'd you pick for tomorrow? I picked one of the Dutch riders, one of the five Dutch riders.
You picked Jakobsen.
You got an Australian back-to-back. Melly's
going to win. So what are we doing?
Okay. Hope you enjoyed the recap of UAE Tour Stage 3, and we'll see you at the sprint stage tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.